we actually started losing people. We started losing residents that had just kind of given up in those 4 months. Those were the things that stayed with me, and not just residents losing their lives, but we had situations where our residents' children had passed away. I almost say sometimes, like, I feel like I have PTSD from it.
Welcome to More Life. I'm Anne Rondepierre. Joining us today is Leanne Blanchard. Leanne is a social worker and the executive director at The Orchards at Southington, a residential and assisted living community for senior citizens in Southington, Connecticut. We've invited Leanne to talk about an issue that is touching each and every one of us in some respect, isolation in the midst of a pandemic, how it's affecting society at large, but particularly our older loved ones. Leanne, welcome, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited about this.
Well, the big news right now in Connecticut is that vaccines are now being offered to people 75 and older, hopefully soon 65 and older. Can you give us a little insight on how we're doing at this launch of Phase 1B?
Well, from what I read and what I've experienced, I guess we're number five in the country of administering the vaccines to the most people. In my community at the Orchards, we actually had our first round of vaccines just last Friday.
Okay.
And I'm very happy to say that with the population of residents that we have, average age about 85 to 90, we had about 98% of our residents get vaccinated. They were so excited because they really feel that it's a hope and a light at the end of the tunnel. In addition, we had about 60% of our staff got vaccinated as well. We had a few that could not get the vaccine on the first round and had to wait till the second date. So far, so good. The residents, like I said, couldn't be more excited to have this hope that things will return to some normal, as I air quote, because
yeah.
We don't know what that is yet or quite remember how that worked. So,
yeah, I can only imagine. Yeah. I've got an elderly mom, and I cannot wait until she can get her vaccine.
Yep.
And we can at least feel a little more comfortable visiting once we're all vaccinated. So that's great news. Yeah, I really appreciate your insight since you work with that population directly.
Mm-hmm.
And the timing of our podcast here was great because it was right in the first wave of this rollout for our elderly population.
Yep. And we had one of our first residents that got vaccinated was 101 years old. And she lived, you know, just around the time everyone talks about the 1918 flu pandemic. For her to be 101 and still want to be part of the solution and trusting the medical field and all that was just like, how can you not be inspired and not want to get the vaccine? So it was things like that really, you know, just keep you going every day.
Oh, that's such great news. And by the way, you can go to hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine to make an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
If you are right now, if you're 75 or older, hopefully 65 and up soon. And if you prefer to schedule your appointment by phone, you can call the Hartford Healthcare Access Center at 860-827-7690. Now, I'll post all this information in the description of this episode. We just wanted to get that important information out there. Okay, so in the meantime, while we're all waiting to get our vaccines, we're often reminded that self-isolating away from family and friends, and especially senior housing facilities, are a way to keep residents safe. What are you doing at the Orchards to help stave off the loneliness of isolation?
To say that's been, I think, personally the hardest part of my job the last 10 months would be an understatement. I'm very passionate about what assisted living is and why it is. And the core of it is the human contact every day. To say it's a community, it really is. It's like a small town of people coming and going, and everybody knows everybody, and not just the residents, but the staff that's a part of it too. And to say that it's, you know, it's your second family, you know, these are people that you look forward to going to work every day. At least I do. And when this pandemic started, we were always accustomed to, you know, the flu outbreak, and you have to close the building, if you will, for a week. You know, where you have to say, visitors, be cautious coming in. You know, we do have an outbreak of the flu or norovirus, whatever it may be. Closing the dining rooms, and a week at a time is so, you know, more than tolerable compared to once this started. And March 8th was the date for the orchards. We were the first in our bundle of assisted livings, which are four in Hartford Healthcare, where we had a potential outbreak of a resident that came in contact with a family member. Thankfully, it wasn't COVID. She didn't have COVID. Okay. But that day, I'll never forget, because I went right to the orchards, and it was a Sunday, and we immediately closed everything down. We weren't even wearing masks at the time. You know, it was that new. From that point to the next 4 months, it was no visitors. It was all meal delivery, so there was no activities. There was no hairdressers coming in or residents going to appointments or, you know, even myself. Like, I felt like our little ladies that get their hair done every week, you know, it wasn't happening. I wasn't even going to the hairdresser. The hairdressers were closed. None of us could go. It was a tough 4 months. And there was hope at that time as the weather got warmer and we got through those 4 months. But there was so much other side effects of COVID. So we didn't get COVID, but we had a lot of side effects. Over those next few months, we actually started losing people. We started losing residents that had just kind of given up in those 4 months.
And you mean losing their lives?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those were the things that stayed with me, and not just residents losing their lives, but we had situations where our residents' children had passed away. So you're now a 90, you know, 85, 90 years old. Losing a child at any age is not something anybody wants to go through. And now all of a sudden these other family members were passing away, and these family members couldn't come in the building, and this was all so new to everybody, too. And it was us, myself and my wonderful staff that I have, that had to go and be with these people and be their shoulder to cry on, even though you had to be 6 feet apart. And it was just an experience that I never want to relive.
Oh, man, that's just heartbreaking.
It was, and you don't get that time back. Like, you can't, and the families of our residents were so understanding, and, you know, they were going through it with us, too, so that's part of the community, all of these sons and daughters and nieces and nephews that are, these are their loved ones, their blood. There was no end in sight at that point. You know, we didn't know how long this was going to last, and you want to keep people going, and you need that, you know, that contact with people. So, and as much as technology, and we were doing, again, the outdoor visitation, we were doing FaceTime visits, but it was a challenge. Technology, even with doctor's appointments, it was challenging. If there's something about human to human, just having that sitting in that comfort, you can't really replace that.
Especially for that generation who did not grow up with a virtual interaction, and especially, you know, near the end of our lives, that contact with our families and our loved ones, because we're theoretically no longer working and might not be socially very active anymore. That's really all there is left. And to risk just the thought of losing that, I would think, could be feel very defeating to someone near the end of life.
Yep. We saw the decline. You know, as much as, you know, we tried to put these things in place, I think they just got to a point like, what else is left for me, you know, in some respect? I talked before about my 101-year-old resident who just got her vaccine, and she's, for me, an inspiration, you know, but now has contact back with her family and things like that. But for some, it really played a very big toll on them. And you saw that decline.
Well, I really wanted to get into that with cognitive decline, yeah. with the population that was already suffering from cognitive, not just physical, but cognitive decline yeah. going into this. Is mm-hmm. that something you could really see, that the isolation accelerated yeah. that decline?
Yes. Yep, for sure, okay. for sure. And I'm going to be interested in years to come, like if they do studies on this, you know, how many people, like we know the death toll, you know, of COVID,
sure.
you know, in the age ranges, but the things of people kind of just giving up and not feeling hopeful because they've already lost some of their freedoms in a sense. You know, they couldn't even go grocery shopping or even be a part of anything anymore. And as much as you try, there's only so many things that you can do. We're not meant to be isolated. It's so unfortunate that COVID came around like this and just turned our lives completely, completely upside down.
Yeah, and before you had mentioned you had to stop the hairdressers or maybe a manicure yep. or something. And I know yep. firsthand amongst that population, that's a big yep. deal. Probably the men too. I know
oh,
firsthand
yeah.
for the women that getting their hair done and it gives them a sense of self and even looking in the mirror and recognizing
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah, it's a piece of our self care.
Yeah,
and it does. It makes you feel good. You know, oh, got my hair done, and it was that piece of I get to go out, eat chit chat with your hairdresser,
yeah.
and you have that
yeah.
that connection. This has taught me those little things that you really can't take for granted. Those are the things that were so important before and the things that we were, like, what assisted living? No, we want you to keep doing those things and going out. And then COVID hit and it's like, whoa, how do we make this community survive in this way? And how do we keep these people feeling whole? And I would go through any length.
to
do that. And I think the visitors was the one thing that once the rate started going up again, was it maybe October, November? Okay. I almost say sometimes, like, I feel like I have PTSD from it. I made a commitment to myself. I said, I can't take it away again. These family members and visitors are a piece of them. They're a piece of their being and their plan of care. I mean, however you want to think about it, knowing that the rest of us, the staff and things like that, we're going home every day. We're with our families. It felt almost like it wasn't even fair, in a sense. So I worked with my team, and we were all on different pages and had different feelings. But we came up with a plan that we weren't going to take visitation away again, but instead we allow two designated visitors, so every resident has two people that they've designated that can visit them. Not on the same day, not at the same time. It has worked. And it has made a difference, and even for the families. The families are overly thankful. And for the most part, they're doing what they need to be doing. They're wearing their masks. They're doing their best to socially distance. You know, they're getting tested. You know, we're doing checks for families that are coming in, the screenings and things like that.
Right, and it
so
sounds
like
you're
right
taking
yeah.
absolutely every precaution. You have the mask, the distancing, testing, and
yep.
screening. It sounds like you're going to great lengths to enhance the lives of these people who, getting back to the topic that we're on here, is the mm-hmm. isolation that can be perhaps just as much of a risk as,
yep.
Unfortunately, as COVID is.
Yes, yep. And that's why, and again, technology is a piece of it, but it doesn't take the place of. So we use it, we support it, but there's nothing more important than the contact.
We're speaking specifically now about this elderly population in a specific environment. This can apply to anybody of any age. You don't even have to live alone to feel
nope.
isolated. Let's talk about some of the physical conditions that could affect someone who's isolated, regardless of age,
mm-hmm.
or feeling stuck inside.
So the physical piece, you know, even we have a great exercise program. Having people staying in their rooms they're not moving around. I call it the furniture walking. You know, when you start to deteriorate, you know, muscles start to deteriorate and balance, and, you know, you start to see more falls, and even hydration becomes important because you're not leaving your rooms. So we had to try and create ways for, we have a great Good Life Fitness program at the Orchards and an exercise physiologist. We had her going room to room for people just to do some exercise. I think that helped some, because otherwise, you know, you just, your muscle deterioration, you know, just little things. They do get 3 meals a day, unfortunately delivered to their apartments, which we're all just done with. We're just, all of us. But they would order, and then we would go and we would do the shopping, and we would bring them back and deliver it to the residents. So that, you know, was a workaround, and that was very helpful. But even things like, you know, some of them had to renew their license. You know, these weren't things that we were ever really involved in.
Right.
So we really had to come up with some new ways to work around. A lot of our residents have pets, cats and dogs, and even getting their cat food or getting their litter for their pet. You know, we had to find ways to do that, and families were certainly doing some of that. They were dropping things off, but unfortunately, some of our residents don't have families that can visit. We were more than, you know, happy to figure out how do we do this? How do we get through this, and how do we keep all of us safe? And then, of course, skilled nursing homes had a different set of guidelines that they had to operate on. The assisted livings, I think we had a little bit more freedom because we weren't mandated to do anything. We weren't mandated to take away visitation. We weren't mandated to keep our residents in the community.
Okay.
Those were all things that we had to look at the guidance, look at what was happening, and kind of make those decisions as best we could in the most educated way possible.
That's one of the reasons I was so anxious to talk to you about this topic, because you're in a unique situation where you have followed the guidelines and you've come up with some workarounds, and I'm hoping you can lend us some of your experience and expertise to talk about people who aren't necessarily living in that type of community. Maybe people who are living alone could put to use in their own home and with their own family.
And we do have some, there's home care out there. And some people, I know we do have Independence at Home and Hartford Healthcare at Home in our network. I guess the core of what I always felt, assisted living versus, you know, living at home at an age where, you know, your driving has been taken away, and people can be very resistive to want to accept help too. My advice is to reach out to Hartford Healthcare. We have case management. There's case management services out there specifically for, you know, elderly and family, because every situation truly is different. You know, I've been working in this field for 17 years, and the things that I've seen have really been so valuable because it's taught me how to give advice in those particular situations. Couples, you know, when they have each other, that's great, but I see some people, too, that have moved in as a couple, and the reality is one of you is going to be without the other at some point, and no one wants to think about that ever, but we have been able to really help those individuals, and it's almost like we have a little cohort of probably about 3 or 4 ladies that all lost their husbands in the last year, not COVID related actually, that have formed a bond. And that's something too that if you're living at home, you still need that connection. Just reaching out to whoever you can, it's okay to say, I'm feeling lonely. I think that's the thing. You have to say, I am lonely. I do need some help. What can I do? And I think that's really the first step.
Once again, we're talking to Leanne Blanchard, and Leanne is a social worker and the executive director at the Orchards at Southington, a residential, independent, and assisted community for senior citizens in Southington, Connecticut. Leanne, you took such great precautions to keep your community safe and succeeded with that from February or March, right?
And, last year.
Yeah, and did very well. And then, ironically, you yourself ended up with COVID recently. You are currently recovering. Is that correct?
That is, yes.
And
that
I thank you. I did ask Leanne before we started the interview if she'd be comfortable sharing her experience with us, because some of what you had to say I found really compelling. So if you could share, first of all, when you got it and how you felt emotionally.
I ironically developed symptoms on December 31st of 2020. So after 9 months of wearing masks and shields and you washing your hands and socially distancing, you know, not just at work and not just doing those things at the Orchards, but also doing those things at home. And, it, you know, if I didn't go anywhere, and it was a hard, hard pill for me to swallow getting COVID. And I felt like, oh, great, it's the last day of 2020. So it was like a salt in the wound. I felt embarrassed. I felt some shame in the first few days that I had to really, in a sense, I had to get over, because it felt like a failure. Like, no, I'm not supposed to get this. I'm the leader of this community, too. And, you know, what are people going to think of me and how I got it? And unfortunately, I also, I gave it to 3 out of 4 of my family members, my 2 kids and my husband did get it. And it's now been 3 weeks, and I still have lasting effects. I have had shortness of breath, and I'm working with a doctor. Was very hard, too, because my expectation, too, was once I had gotten over that shame and blaming myself and being upset that I got it, I was like in the acceptance phase of, okay, I have COVID, we're going to get over this, and I'm going to go back to work and back to my life. And I didn't get better. So it was something that was kind of eye-opening, that we spent so much time focusing on not getting COVID that there was very little that I personally knew about the long-term effects, or you're cleared to go back to work and you go back to work. But, you know, I did, and it was like, I'm not myself. I can't move as fast as I want to. Mm. I couldn't think as fast as I needed to. In some cases, I couldn't even talk as fast as I wanted to.
And you were no longer contagious. That's why you were clear.
No longer contagious.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. I felt confident and comfortable going back to work. I didn't feel like I was worried about spreading it to somebody else or anything like that, because I had the antibodies. And in some ways, I felt almost like, I can do anything I want now. I can go here and I can go there.
If there's one silver lining.
Yeah, and the worry of not getting it went away. But there was this other piece of it of, wait, I'm still recovering from this. This is not like a virus or like the flu where you're just home for a few days and then you're better and you go back to your life. It wasn't like that. And that was also a challenge and hard to overcome.
Moral of that story is we don't want to get it. First and foremost, you and all your family members are doing relatively fine, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It definitely, and now seeing that my boys, you know, feeling guilty that they even got it to begin with, but they bounced back quickly. And my husband's still tired, still feeling some fatigue, but it just goes to show you how different it is in every person and why it's so important that we do these things, because you just
don't know
how your body reacts to it, because it's so different in every person.
And it really, I mean, you really made an impact on me when you talked about feeling embarrassed or that you had failed in some way. Leanne, we can tell just from your passion for what you do and the great pains you've gone to keep your community safe. And that kind of stigma makes me sad. I understand that.
Yeah.
I would feel the same way. And of course, there are people out there who are reckless or whatever. That'd be a different story. But in your case, I'm sorry that you had to feel that way and that you're still not feeling back to yourself. But you've got a story to tell, and you've got experience to share with all of us. We so appreciate this.
Thank you. Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of what's calling to me right now, too. I've been speaking with some of my friends that have also now, many more of us have gotten it, I think, on this second wave. Not sure why. It's interesting because I realize we're all feeling a little bit of the same way. We're on this island, and I can see other people, but I can't get to them. We all feel a sense of isolation, I think. We're not even seeing our friends like we were. In the summertime, at least we could socially distance, I think, of people a little bit, and doing a little bit more outside, and I think that helped. But the winter is going to be, I think it's still going to be a rough couple more months.
Yeah, and here in Connecticut, it's in any given winter. You know, it's the days are shorter, yeah. And you hit February and March, and it just seems like forever. Mm-hmm. And we all can't wait for the warm weather and the vaccine, and hopefully things will start getting back to normal. But, you know, it's going to take time, and we still need to address the isolation, and not just the elderly, really everyone. You know, I've seen it affect people of all ages, you know, particularly for young people who, you know, normally would be out there celebrating their graduations or starting a new job. Mm-hmm. And so it hits all of us, but it just does particularly hit me and all of us, I'm sure, for those who are near the end of their lives and where they don't have those, that really family and human contact is their primary reason for living, you might say.
Right.
And
Yeah.
We so appreciate the great lengths you're going to find your workarounds and battle the isolation, the mental decline, the physical decline, the toll it can take can be devastating.
Yes, and I thank you for, you know, allowing me to talk about these things and the experiences, because I hope we're all learning from them, and we can find a way to come together and learn from each other. I think that's the best that we can do. And I appreciate that you are passionate about this topic as well. So thank you.
Yeah, it's a great topic, and it's a great opportunity for us to share some important resources for, especially, particularly for elderly people and for the younger population too. I'll put all the links and resources again in the description of this episode. But we do have Dementia Caregiver Virtual Support Group. That's really good. I have had the pleasure of sitting in on one of those. And we have Independence at Home. Can you remind us what services they provide?
Yep. So they can provide anything from homemaking, companion, and 24-hour or 12-hour live-ins if need be. So an extra layer of companionship or even help with activities of daily living. There's also the Center for Healthy Aging, which I'm sure, Ann, you know about that, but that's another great resource. We're always promoting them as well. They can help with just about anything. So if there's ever a question, they would probably be the great ones to call to get some, where do I start, where do I go, and ask the questions of what's happening, especially for people living alone and in the community.
Mm-hmm. They're a fantastic resource, Hartford HealthCare's Center for Healthy Aging. You can Google it, but again, I will put their contact information in the podcast description. And so there are a lot of resources out there. We want everyone to take advantage of them.
And it's free. That's, I think, something else that
people are
worried about, you know, and insurance, you know, costs and things like that, but they have lots of referral sources and are free to anybody who calls.
Leanne, what are some safe and simple ways that perhaps we could stay in touch with each other, or especially elderly loved ones?
I think some of the things that, you know, we've used are definitely some, you know, like pen pals or cards, letters, FaceTime, or Zoom has become very popular, and it can still be a challenge. In our community, we have people that know how to use it and can help residents do that, but those have been some very vital lifelines for people. The other thing is just the old-fashioned telephone, just calling somebody and saying hello, and it could be a 5-minute or a 50-minute conversation, but those are some of the things that have really helped.
Sure. I love that. I kind of love the old school. There is nothing like getting a written letter or note at any age, frankly, because it's tangible and you can see the person's handwriting and feel a little bit more of their personality.
And we even, there was some creative, like, little packages and things that I saw families doing. One of my residents, her niece, had actually gotten her, it's so cute, a Sock of the Month Club. And every month, she got a different pair of these cute socks. Like, some of them had, like, I don't know, bananas on them, or if it was related to a certain national something day. And then each pair of socks had, like, a story to it. It was really cute. So it was something that they could kind of look forward to as well.
That's a great suggestion. I love that one.
Yeah. She always loved coming around and, you know, I would say, what socks are you wearing today? Are you wearing your Sock of the Month Club? You know, it was a talking piece,
right,
too,
you
know, that they could, you know, share and you could make that connection. There's a lot of creative things that you can do online with, like, Shutterfly or some of those things where you can have a picture.
Yes.
So maybe it's a picture of a grandchild, and then they have to put the puzzle together.
I've had some families do that, too. Yeah, and I've also seen people talking about maybe sharing a recipe, preparing the same meal, or reading a book together or watching something on Netflix, you know, together so that they can discuss it after the fact.
Yes.
Just some way to feel a little more connected.
Yes. It's not a one-size-fits-all for sure. Not everybody's going to be able to do a Zoom
or,
you know, but trying to find the right way to make the connection.
Well, Leanne, thank you so much for joining us. All the best and a speedy recovery to you.
Thank you, Anne.
If you or someone you love is feeling isolated or in need of emotional support, call Hartford HealthCare's Community Care Hotline, 1-833-621-0600. To learn more about the Orchards or the other support services mentioned in this podcast, including the vaccine, check this episode's notes for links and information. For Hartford HealthCare, I'm Anne Rhonda Pierre. Thanks for listening to More Life.
I'm ready for my close-up. All the faces start to light up. You know I love this feeling. I got more life in my life. If you feel it, then you'll know. We can go anywhere we wanna go. You're gonna love this feeling. We got more life in our life. Oh, I won't stop going. No sign of slowing. Now I know it. Start to light up. You know I love this feeling. I got more life in my life.